Good evening once again. Today's topic, man and the environment. I'll be dealing it with four headings. One is, what is environment, the types of environment. Secondly, the theosophical view about environment. Thirdly, about the examples from real life experiences. And fourthly, concluding it. Now, for the definition, some call it environment, some call it environment. I take it as environment. Environment is a complex of physical, chemical, and biotic factors that act upon an organism or an ecosystem and ultimately determine its form and survival. Making it still simpler, environment is the circumstances, objects, conditions by which we are surrounded. And making it still simpler, it is surroundings. When you know that environment is basically of, one is the natural and one is the social environment. That is the human-made, man-made environment. But here, the emphasis on this about this talk will be more on the inner environment from the theosophical point of view. The natural environment is what a lot of talk is going about it, about the hills, the valleys, the forests, the rivers, the seas, you name it, everything that is natural. Natural resources. This is the natural, the man-made environment, both economical and political. It stands for various things, our habitat, our way of living, the how, homes, the society that we have created, the universities, the schools, the colleges, the hospitals, the political structures. Everything comes under the social environment. And what is the inner environment? The inner environment is our own thoughts, our emotions, and what we are. Every student of theosophy soon learns that the grand process of cosmos are all expressions of one life manifesting in numberless forms. We cannot be therefore separate from the universe. To the extent that this is realized, he is in direct contact with nature. That is, in simpler words, telling the one who sees the self in all and all in self. That is unity in all. Man's reaction to his environment, or on contrary today, modified due to his innate material well-being. It's motivated by self-gratification at almost any cost. Hence, he feels separated from nature, separated from environment. It is basically modified by its innate experiences gained through various ways. Maybe his upbringing, his schooling, his relationships, his work, and his study. Theosophy enlarges the above picture. It helps to understand our intimate relationship with all, even the elemental kingdom, which plays a major vital role in the workings of the cosmos. We may not understand this fully, or maybe we need another lecture for this, but this is so true. philosophy teaches us that the prime need is altruism. As all selfish acts have adverse effects. All that is happening on earth, man is responsible in some way or the other. It teaches us that universal brotherhood is the way ahead. What is this inner environment? Where are the seeds of this inner environment? These seeds of wisdom grow within. But they cannot grow in airless space. To live and reap experience, the mind needs breadth, depth, and point to draw it towards the diamond soul. Head learning will not take us there. Head learning will create comfort. Yes, the technology. But in some ways, it is harming the physical environment at alarming portions. Theosophy, on the other hand, asks us about doing our duties to all men and to ourselves last. It is not in the attainment of personal happiness, but in the happiness of others. Seeking not those points in Maya's realms, but soaring beyond illusions, searching for the eternal and changeless Sat. After having said so, we may ask ourselves, this sounds so beautiful, an inner environment where everybody is working for each other, where there is happiness, where you're searching for the eternal, you're living in the eternal, searching for the changeless Sat. Is it possible today to live like this? Out of this student's experience of having traveled, I put forth few examples, real life experiences of having seen where the inner environment of a community can change the community and the society as well as the natural environment. I would take the first example of the Kingdom of Bhutan. Many of you may have visited or maybe have heard about it. This is a small Himalayan kingdom where Buddhism is the religion and the governance believes more in the happiness quotient rather than the GDP. Man is in harmony with the society, and the society is in harmony with nature. The whole world looks up to this kingdom because of the way it has been created. And who created this? The very inhabitants. Man himself. Let me go a little further to the happiest country in the world, Finland. Education is free. Hospital expenses are free. Housing is good. Governance is good. There's no schooling till 7 years of age for the children. They create libraries where people come and read. Maybe a little bit of head learning is also there, but there's a lot of heart learning too. Or Iceland, for that matter, where there is no army at all and zero crime rate. Nearer to our own country, we have Sikkim, again a Buddhist state, or the simplest Arunachal Pradesh, where simple living and quality of life and the way the compassion is towards one another is at a much higher level. I've just taken these 4 or 5 examples. There must be many places in and around, in pockets, where the inner environment of man, the environment of the society, and the natural environment are all in harmony. It takes me back to the very words of Gandhiji. Because I find there's this simplest line of similarity in all these lands. Gandhiji is often told that there is enough for everyone's need, but not for everyone's greed. So maybe they have really understood the meaning of this. Dalai Lama, on a recent talk, on asking about the environmental issues that we are all facing today, in a global scale, said that the answer to this does not lie in making forums, shouting out, telling, save the earth, but it starts with the simplest form of hygiene of inner thoughts. Let's dwell a little deeper into this. What do you mean by hygiene of inner thoughts? Last Sunday, we had a talk on the enemies of man. Where do these enemies reside? They don't reside outside. They're very much within. Cleaning up, purging out, every day, all that is unnecessary, and allowing the seeds of wisdom to grow, that is meant by hygiene of inner thoughts. He also mentioned that the mental harmony is also as important as physical harmony, or in other words, the healthy mind is as important as healthy body. And the two most important virtues are compassion and forgiveness. I would state here a reading from the Voice of Silence as to when he has ceased to hear the many, he may discern the one, the inner sound which kills the other. Then only, not till then, shall we forsake the region of Asat, the false, to come into the realm of Sat, the true. Before the soul can see, The harmony within must be attained, and fleshly eyes be rendered blind to all illusion. Before the soul can hear, the image has to become as deaf to roarings as to whispers, to cries of bellowing elephants as to the silvery buzzing of the golden firefly. Before the soul can comprehend and remember, she must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is modeled at first united with the potter's mind. For then the soul will hear and will remember, and then to the inner ear will speak the voice of the silence. To understand this further, I would ask each one of you to look deeper within yourself. What is my duty? What is my duty towards myself, my fellow men? Am I separate from others? Or am I one with all? What is the reason why I am reading theosophy or attending these meetings? Can I make a difference? Solutions, the problems to the environment are so huge. How can I change just by changing my inner environment? It's a deep question that each one of us have to ask ourselves. Sorry about the sounds in the background, because these are the insects and I'm in a very different place in the mountains. So if you can hear the sounds, please excuse the insects, but there's a cicadas. Maybe responding to whatever I'm saying. So these are the questions that everybody should ask. It is not enough to take only the physical course of action to solve environmental problems. We must seek out and address the real issue. What is the cause of problems, which go back to human actions in the past as well as whatever is happening in the present? The theosophical themes of reincarnation and karma, this student feels, are a necessary background for understanding environmental issues and solutions. Without an understanding of reincarnation and karma, all the solutions that we are looking forward today will just be superficial work and not have a deep impact. And how do we do a deep impact work? Each one of us are responsible. Each one can do a difference. Just like one little candle can light 1,000 candles, each one of us are a light. Changing the inner environment, changing your inner thoughts, and making them more altruistic, more of service, he or she feels responsible for every thought, word, and action. This student feels, is what will create changes. You cannot build a palace on somebody's grave. I'm not against technology, nor against businesses, but ethical way of doing business, ethical way of living a life, working for the good of all, and not just selfish gains. Sowing the seeds of altruistic thoughts in ourselves and whomever we come across, and especially the young ones, which are the hope ahead for the 21st century. Our country, India, as Madam Blavatsky has said in her book, From the Caves and Jungles of Hindustan, says, there is a holy spot at every step. What happened to our country? I'd like to add here Wadia's writings. He says, follow the advice of the sages. Meditate on the animals and miseries of our civilization. Discover the root of the maladies. We find that the human mind has triumphed by neglecting and defying the moral forces which are at work in the universe. This is not generally perceived, and men and their leaders alike are deluded. Each presumes that he and his nation or class are following moral principles, while they are slaves of passion, prejudices, and pelf. Man, the thinker, has not been able to follow the teachings of a long line of sages which state, allow not the force of vice to lead your mind, but so educate the mind that it follows the lead of the force of virtue. Knowledge bereft of love, of compassion, of charity, of harmony flourishes, and mass thought action stifles the voice of spirit, even in the good individuals. Bereft of moral principles, they have always thought the superiority of moral ideas over mental thoughts. They have pointed to the truth of truths, that wisdom is compassion, that justice is a divinity, is not knowledge formed, but virtue formed, and the vices make us demonic. How beautiful are these words? Just by reading, it does not change us. Practically applying it in our daily lives. Let us sow the seeds of divine wisdom. Desire only what is unattainable. Desire only that, only the eternal. Desire only that is what is within you. On a lot of introspective talk, it should not leave you then and there, but these seeds should penetrate deep within each one of us. If we are here, we are here for a reason. We are here to do a work for humanity, and it all starts with each one of us. We will be like the ones who are attracted to a wrong, false education or the head learning, and we will be like the moth attracted to the dazzling flame of the night life, which is doomed to perish in the oil. Do you want to be like that? Or do you want to take the first step towards making a change? The masters have given us lot of learnings, lot of food for thought. we need to use it. Even a small change in your inner environment can make a huge difference. When you look around, yes, you see the overwhelming problems that humanity has created. But just look deep within and ask yourself, how did this all come about? I know I talk maybe a little difficult to digest. Every day we need to be shifting, sorting, cleansing, recycling our inner environment. Understand our philosophies of reincarnation and karma. We will reap as we sow, said Jesus. We are all responsible for whatever is happening. If man is responsible enough, I think he can change his inner environment, which in turn is a societal environment, and which will in turn will change the natural environment. And the responsibility lies in each one of us. I would end this talk with a poetry written by a 10-year-old child who has been in constant touch with the nature and who's had a small little introduction to philosophy at such a tender age. And she's written a poem in Kannada. I will explain in English later. I read it in Kannada. Ulidare kaadu aliyadu naadu. Gidamara belasi parisaravanna ulisi. Halliyalli hakkiya chilipili nagaradalli igirudu gaadiya galibili. ಕಾಮನ ಬಿಲ್ಲು ಹಳ್ಳಿಯ ಸಂಧ್ಯ ನಗರದಲ್ಲಿ ಗೊತ್ತೇ ನಿಮಗೂ ಅತ್ಯಂತ ಕೆಟ್ಟ ಪ್ರಾಣಿ ಮಾನವ ಎಲ್ಲದಲ್ಲೇ ಹಾಕುವ ಆದರೆ ಹೆಜ್ಜೆ ನೀಡುತ್ತಾ ಬರುವ ರೈತ ನಮ್ಮೆಲ್ಲರ ಪಾಲಿಗೆ ಅವನೇ ಅನ್ನದಾತ ಕಾಡಿನ ರಕ್ಷಣೆಯವೇ ನಮ್ಮ ರಕ್ಷಣೆ ಮನೆಗೊಂದು ಮರ ಇದ್ದರೆ ಊರಿಗೊಂದು ವನ ಇರಬಹುದು ಅರಣ್ಯವಿಲ್ಲದೆ ಜೀವವಿಲ್ಲ ಯಾಕೆಂದರೆ ಗಿಡ ನಕ್ಕರೆ ಜಗ ನಗುವುದು ಅರಣ್ಯ ಮಾಡಿ ದೇಶವೇ ನಾಶವಾಗುವುದು ಕೂಗುತ್ತಿದ್ದ ಹಕ್ಕಿ ದಿನವೂ ಹೇಳುವುದು ಇದೇ ನನ್ನ ಹಳ್ಳಿಯ ಸೊಗಸು ಇದೇ ಗಾಂಧಿ ತಾತನ ಕನಸು ಇಟ್ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ ದಿಸ್ ಚೈಲ್ಡ್ ಇಸ್ ಟೆಲಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ಟೇಕ್ ಕೇರ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಎನ್ವೈರನ್ಮೆಂಟ್ The birds are asking you to say so. Get into real farming of yourself and maybe the farming of your soul. And this is the dream of my granddad, Gandhiji, who is the father of the nation. are not responsible as his children to carry on the with this. I end the talk, but before ending, I'll do a small reading from Through the Gates of Gold. The man who chooses the way of effort and refuses to allow the sleep of indolence to dull his soul finds in his pleasures a new and finer joy each time he tastes them. A something subtle, subtle, and remote which removes them more and more from the state in which more sensuousness is on. This subtle essence is that elixir of life which makes man immortal. Why not look around us and find that the fragments of pieces that we have made, can we all put them together and make it peace? PEACE. Thank you.
Thanks. Excellent lecture. I have one question.
Yes.
You spoke of transformation that comes about in the social and physical environment as our inner perception, understanding of the higher dimensions of unity of self is more and more realized. The greater harmony results in social and physical environment. Now, our request is, can you relate your experience in bringing about this transformation in your estate and the effect it has had and having on the, in the neighborhood?
Yes, I would do so. I kept this away because it was a personal thing, but since we asked for it, I would say that when I inherited this land, which was about 110 acres, I came to know that 35 acres of this land was encroached by my ancestors. It was in my hands either to fight it or what I can do with it. Having theosophy in my life made me realize that what my ancestors had done, knowingly or unknowingly, was not in harmony with the will of nature. So I voluntarily gave it away, 35 acres back to the government, and told that I would like this to be the forest. Because this 70 acres of land is mine, legally mine, or mine, I would say, I would not even say mine, it is, I'm the caretaker of this land. But the 35 acres that my ancestors have encroached, I would like to give it back. The neighbors, the surroundings people called me mad. They said, who would give acres of land like this back to the forest, to become a forest? But today, when that whole land has become completely green, filled with animals, and there's a completely an environmental change here, and the society also is looking up as to understand the deeper understanding of what is ownership of land, what is taking care of the land. nothing to boast of, but it has definitely created a kind of a questioning quality in my surrounding neighborhood. Today, the environment of the estate itself has changed. And it's not just organic. The organic changes happened because of the organic thoughts that arise. So the inner environment started becoming organic before the land became organic. And today everybody is asking and looking for the changes that are happening around. And out of the blue, people from Sweden came to know about this, and without even a certification, they took all the products of this land. And today everybody's eyes are opening as to what true altruistic understanding of nature can make such a lot of difference in one's life. After being a Rotarian from the last 2 years and giving and seeing the example, a lot of people are getting into organic agriculture without using pesticides or herbicides. And the whole land is coming back to its original Malnad look. That's why you can hear the Soma cicadas. That's the joy. That's what Gandhiji's words of saying, that is, there was enough for everyone, my need, but not for my greed. I could have had the 35 acres and said, I want that also, and had a fight. But I said, so be it. And this is how theosophy has changed my inner thoughts. And this has led to a societal change, which I can see people around me, children around me. Here, these are the staff children who have written this poetry. And also the environment, the natural environment has also done, has gone through a beautiful change. So this is what I would like to say. I hope I have answered your question.
Yes, very inspiring. Krishna makes a statement in the Bhagavad Gita. This devotion in action is called yoga. Devotion to the higher good, to which is subordinated the individual good. He says even a little of this practice saves one from great danger. How true it is. So what came out of the talk with effect is harmony in word and act. What we inwardly perceive as true, this should express itself in words and act, harmony in word and act. That will gradually bring about integration of thought, word, and deed. this has been this inner transformational principle was very nicely brought out in the talk. So, anyone else has any comments to make?
Yes, sir. I'm going off the track. That background sound, that insects, yes, and other, in the night time, it is normally we hear when you go out in the nature, in the night, in the silence. This I'm very fond of this this noise or sound, or it's a nature's orchestra. Can you put something? How you capture something?
See, these are called the cicadas.
Yeah.
I am in the dense forest of Malnad. We have a plantation, and moreover, this plantation is organic and completely natural. So we have a lot of the daytimes we have birds, we have peacocks, we have the night we have the cicadas. These are the cicadas, which, and in the rainy season, this is the mating call, actually. But it's for me, it's like the music. It's the nature's music. Yeah. And in the morning, there's the nature's music of birds. And also, like I would say, about example of taking about peacocks, something new, a lot of learning that happens when you are in nature. The peacocks have got an inner intelligence, what we call it fohat in theosophical language, the inner intelligence. They don't eat the earthworms, but they eat the leeches. How intelligent is that? Because the earthworms, they are so useful to the land. But they have their enough food in the leeches. So little things, which I think are so beautiful to understand. When I think our Indian ancient philosophy, when it started the... if you look at it, I may come from a different background, but what my little understanding of Hinduism is, that why is that Tulsi was worshipped, or the coconut tree, or the Nagas, or any animal, any plant, just to show us the divinity in all. So in coming into smaller understanding, I would say I find divinity in the cicadas, and those calls are the divine calls.
Thank
I hope
you.
I thank answered your question.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
We see a lot of talk these days about food habits.
Yes.
And in relation to environment, and how are food habits of the masses affecting the agriculture and deforestation, as well as not just the flora but even the fauna in terms of animals. So we see a lot of people trying to change and justify each of their own food habits, saying how it is natural or not natural and how it is good. Each one's right is another person's wrong. But they do have some kind of a spiraling impact on all of us. How do we go about this?
The students wants to know that what is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically asking about the true diet. I would put it like this. The true theosophic diet, I'll put it because we're talking about theosophy here, and it's a theosophical lecture. I would say true theosophic diet is not either meat, wine, or having vegetarian or non-vegetarian, or eating sattvic food and rajasic food, nothing like that. It is basically unselfish thoughts and deeds, untiring devotion to the welfare of humanity. And finally, it's the unutterable aspiration to the divine supreme soul. This is what we can grow upon.
This is entirely true. Entirely true.
Thank you.
Entirely true.
I hope I answered your question.
Very, very well answered. And we can take example of very orthodox, uncompromising vegetarians. Okay, outwardly. But their narrow-mindedness, bigotry, the communal hatred, is it not doing phenomenal harm, damage to the soul environment, which find itself reflected in disharmony and discard on society? So, what is the use of being a strict vegetarian and feeding on giving the mind such harmful, poisonous food while feeding the body with vegetables? I mean, this is inverting the priorities.
Tell about judge first, then I'll do.
Judge shows in the notes of the Bhagavad Gita that you don't have to forcibly change your diet because of some fad. As your inner soul's environment and needs change because of higher thought, the needs of the body also undergo change from within without, and you will naturally seek that which sustains the change that the body needs, brought about by change in your soul environment. This is the right way. Please go ahead.
It says that if you refrain from meat or fish for that, so that you can develop psychic powers and senses, and you feel that you are better than other, and you are doing it for reasons, then you are in vain, because this is not so. It is the diet that is best agrees with you, taken in moderation, neither too much nor too little. And the inner nature, the diet of your thoughts and your motives, more than thoughts, it's your motives also. If they are low, selfish, of what use is it? So much of importance is given to organic living, organic thought, organic food. But what about organic thoughts? I think it starts there. That is the student's understanding.
Seems very reasonable and just.
I hope I answered Murali's question.
Yes, Gladys, thank you.
Jesus also said that not that which goeth into the mouth defileth a man, but that which come out of the mouth, this defileth the man.
Perfect, yes.
And true. Even HPB, Benjamin Franklin, one of the great figures of American independence, they all reverted back to non-veg food for bodily constitution reasons, not and went to do great works.
Talking from my own experience, I used to love fish. I'm not a meat eater, but I used to love fish. But of late, it is not agreeing with me. I wouldn't say that whatever agrees with you, you have, you know, the olden days, there was a saying that your gut knows well. I think
that's
the
right.
The more intuitive you become, you can ask yourself, is this what I want? If the gut says yes, and if you are in line with your harmony, you take it. If your gut says no, don't take it. That's all, as simple as that. Why is so much of importance given to food, which is just a part of living?
Can I intervene, please, Dwarka?
Yes, please. Yes, sir. You can.
Your talk was nice, and so many interactions have happened. It is very interesting. But you know, at circumstances, we are constrained by our tradition and ancestral habits, and we are known by the birth we have taken place and in the environment, and we are supposed to follow it. There this contradiction comes, and either I have to run away, come out of the family, or they themselves will separate themselves and leave me alone.
Can you be more specific? What is it that you want to know, you're talking about?
Tell me, if I understand him right, what he's saying is, Dwarkanath Mysore is saying is that it's all very fine what the theosophical outlook, but it painfully clashes with the family, environment, their priorities, values, your traditions, customs. It painfully clashes with it, and there seems to be no hope other than running away from it. Is that right, Dwarkanath?
Yes, sir.
So that is the question.
Yes. To answer that, to the best of my ability, I would say that nothing is easy. To walk in the path of theosophy, or to walk in the path of truth, we would say it. Nothing is easy. Take the example of Gandhiji. What he was and what he became, and what was the result of what the outcome of the result. You take various examples, whether it's Madame Blavatsky or Judge or Wadiaji or anybody for that example, who has walked in the road less traveled. You should be willing to make those sufferings, and those you should be willing to purge out every day something or the other for the inner, for the real elixir of life to enter you. This is been told very well in the Bhagavad Gita also. And also, if you say Jesus' words, he says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all will be added on to you. It is not an easy path, Mr. Dear Dwarkanath, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
But it is not impossible.
Yes.
That's
one
all
more thing, ma'am.
Yes.
Ma'am, and I was very happy about the one new phrase you have brought out. That is organic thought. That is a very interesting phrase. And if we give a thought to it, and we'll be doing many justice. Whether it is food or environment or relationship, a harmony will be created within ourselves and in the world outside. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I had a question. I read in the book, The Building of the Home by B.P. Vadia, sir.
So yes. Here in the chapter, it says every kind of animal tissue, however you may cook it, still remains certain marked characteristics of animal which it belong to, and which characteristics can be recognized. So this is what, like, you know, is said in the book. I just want to know your thought on that. Like, how should I understand this, actually?
Yes, Shruti. To answer you briefly, I would say that there is two ways of looking at it. There are two perspectives to it. I would say that Dalai Lama, there are a lot of Buddhists who are also non-vegetarians. If you look at our ancient scriptures, from what I have heard, there were Brahmins who were non-vegetarians too.
Yes.
It is not the... For me, I agree with what Wadiaji says, that there is something which remains the gross within you, the animal tissue, yes. But it is not the food that is important. It is the way you look at food, the thoughts and the motives behind the food that is of much importance than what the food is. That is my understanding of
it. Yes, yes, definitely.
I hope I answered your question.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Welcome. I think we come to the end of the talk.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for...